Chapter 5. I'm Still Standing. Elton John, 1983. Chrissy loves the hospital. She doesn't ever want to leave, but everyone looks at her like she's crazy when she says it. Her mother blames it on the concussion. Jason thinks it's because she wants to be a nurse. They're both wrong. Chrissy imagines people calling her Dr. Cunningham and deferring to her the way everyone seems to bow to the doctors here. The thought makes her smile. But then everyone looks away because, well, yeah. She looks kind of freaky right now. The bruised eyes are her most unsettling injury. Her right arm is all wrapped up and her face is purpling. But she's also developed subconjunctival hemorrhages in both eyes. Her nurse, Nurse Mendoza, explained that several blood vessels in the white parts of her eyes, the sclera, Chrissy's mind supplies, had burst. While there was no permanent damage and the blood pooling there wasn't doing any harm, Chrissy will look a bit ghoulish for anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks. It probably happened when you were hit, sweetheart, Nurse Mendoza says, patting Chrissy's leg beneath the scratchy hospital blankets. Don't worry, you'll be back to your beautiful self soon. Chrissy likes Nurse Mendoza a lot, but hopes her prognosis is wrong. She secretly, silently, wishes for her eyes to stay strange and otherworldly for as long as possible. Her mother can't bear to look at her now. And Chrissy doesn't mind that at all. Her mother has always hated hospitals. Chrissy wonders a little if that's part of why she's so determined to attend medical school. She thinks it might be. Mom visits once on that first day, dropping off a bag of clothes, Chrissy's daily Slim Fast shakes, and a pair of oversized sunglasses to hide her hideous eyes. Her mother sits beside Chrissy's bed, on her left side, not her right. Like not seeing the colossal cast will make it less real. Just pretend it didn't happen, Jason's voice says in Chrissy's memory. They don't speak during Mom's visits. She can't get Chrissy's daily measurements while she's confined to the hospital bed. It must drive the woman nuts. Jason is in the hospital room more often, but he's busy too, and he tells her that he can't spend his whole spring break at her bedside. Chrissy is glad of that too, because he doesn't believe her about what happened. Jason is suspicious. He's angry, he's worried, and he's suspicious. Well, everyone's suspicious. The doctors, the police, the cheer team, her parents. But luckily, the story they cooked up in Eddie's living room hasn't broken down just yet. The medical team didn't like the car accident victim theory that Steve and Robin had put forth. Still, no one could deny that most of the bones of her left hand, the phalanges, a few metacarpals, even her scaphoid, and all three bones in her arm, radius, ulna, humerus, were broken. She also had a broken elbow. An intercondylar fracture, a phrase Chrissy rolled around her mouth, savoring the consonants and vowels. It's like everything was snapped like a twig by, I don't know, a giant or something, one doctor had said, rubbing his chin as he looked at her x-rays. They're all simple in hairline fractures, added the radiologist. There are just a lot of them. But there are very few soft tissue injuries, the ER nurse told Chrissy's dad once he arrived from his business trip in Indianapolis. Other than her eyes, of course. Her nose isn't broken, and she's got a few bruised ribs. We think she probably has a concussion, too. That might explain some of the confusion, but we can't rule out the fact that she's also on morphine right now for the pain. Chrissy decided very quickly that she does not like morphine. It felt like cool silver running up her arm, but the muzziness it brought made her anxious. Somewhere, at the edges of her consciousness, she could hear muttered whispers and the sinister ticking of a clock waiting to chime. As she lay on a cot in the ER, Chrissy had reached out for someone, anyone, and Robin, strange mile-a-minute Robin, caught her hand. "Help me," Chrissy gasped, tongue and mind coming unmoored. "Robin, please." Robin made a noise like a startled goat and looked panicked. "How? Do you need more painkillers?" "No." Chrissy knew she sounded panicky, and she was, but she did not want to sink deeper into the darkness. "Just, talk to me, please." Robin nodded. "I can definitely do that. Well, you're in the ER at Hawkins Memorial, and the doctors are saying you're going to need surgery. Steve is talking to your dad." Robin had a nice voice, and Chrissy let herself focus on the sound rather than the meaning of her words. She could feel Robin's heartbeat under the tips of her fingers, which hadn't released the other girl's wrist. Robin's leg bounced as she spoke. The movement reminded Chrissy of Eddie, who never seemed to stop moving. She hoped he was okay. She'd hated leaving him behind. It felt wrong to walk away from him. When Robin finally fell silent, Chrissy spoke up. "You're in band," she said, hoping Robin would forgive the non sequitur. "What do you like about band?" The other girl looked surprised. The people are really nice." Robin's fingers brushed the inside of Chrissy's forearm, feather light. Soft, Chrissy thought. No calluses. Eddie had calluses, which are just toughened areas of skin. Chrissy used to get calluses from ballet. Her mother hated them and tried to scrub them away, scraping at Chrissy's feet until they bled. Eddie didn't do ballet. He played the guitar. Chrissy liked the guitar. It was a good instrument. Prince was a great guitarist. She liked Prince. Robin was still speaking, and Chrissy tried to focus. "It looks like your mom might be leaving." "That's nice," Chrissy nodded. Nodding still hurt, but less now, and the ticking wasn't as loud. It was just a whisper somewhere, waiting. Robin looked like she wasn't sure it was nice, but then she shrugged. "What do you like about cheerleading?" What did Chrissy like about cheerleading? Her team, some of the time. She missed Jenna. And "I can fly," Chrissy said, then blinked a few times and met Robin's eyes. The ticking got louder in her mind. "I mean, not like tonight. I mean..." She trailed off, and Robin nodded. "I get it, yeah. Getting flung around by the other girls sounds nice." Chrissy doesn't remember much after that. Despite her protestations, the doctors gave her more drugs. Those made her feel like she was sinking into the mattress, being pulled down and down and down and down. Someone said it was time to go. Chrissy didn't see either of her parents. Steve appeared, hair flopping over his forehead, said he would let everyone know what was going on. He told Chrissy not to worry, that everything would be all right. Chrissy was worried, but she was also very tired, and everything was moving in slow motion. Then she was counting backwards under a bright light, until she wasn't anywhere anymore. She dreamed in jagged, scattered jitters. She was in a cage in the Hawkins High gym, and the cage got smaller and smaller and smaller until her bones began to break. She dreamed she was running, stumbling, falling forward, and then down and down and down. She dreamed she was a doll on a stand in a glass case, but then she was inside the clock's face, and the glass was cracking and spiders were pouring out. And then she was running, her shoes getting caught in the hem of her stupid long dress, but she had to run and get away from the thing. When she woke up, Chrissy was alive, and her arm hurt in new, interesting ways. She had a lot of visitors that first day in the hospital, but she was still so out of it on pain meds that she barely remembers most of them. The world through the sunglasses was dim and unreal. Someone turned a radio on, and that helped to drown out the ticking. The cheer squad brought flowers and balloons. Jason brought her a big teddy bear and a box of chocolates she will never eat. People talk about what a shame it is that she's broken her right hand. Senior year is hard enough when you can take notes, but she is such a good student, they say. Her grades will be fine. Everyone always forgets that Chrissy is a lefty. Everyone except her mom, who never forgets anything that is wrong with her daughter. Some people signed the cast that covers her from fingertips to armpit, scrawling names on the areas not concealed by the sling that straps her arm to her body. Jason says it shows how much people care about her, and points to his name, written in big block letters that span her bicep. But Chrissy wasn't really there for the visits, so seeing the colorful signatures is just unnerving. It's something that happened to her. So much more than what happened at Eddie's trailer. The signatures feel like crop circles. Strange and alien. Jason pets her hair and tells her not to think so much right now. But at least he doesn't tell her to pretend it didn't happen. Around noon, Chrissy asks Nurse Mendoza, who has cool, leathery hands, for something other than morphine. "It's making me nauseous," she says, which is true, and it makes my head hurt. They scale back the morphine and add an intravenous drip of acetaminophen. Chrissy still feels foggy, but it's not as bad, and the whispers in her mind fade away. That's more than enough to make up for the burning ache in her arm. The cops came to her flower-filled room to talk that afternoon. Chrissy did her best to remember everything she had rehearsed with Steve and Robin in the car. "Eddie helped me," Chrissy repeated when they asked her about him. "I asked him for a ride, and he helped me. He dropped me off..."
"No one saw him anywhere near Benny's, miss," interrupted one of the cops.
"He's got light skin, a mustache, and deceptively kind eyes." Chrissy stammered, glad for once to be hidden behind the big sunglasses.
I asked him to drop me off a little ways away from Benny's. I wanted to walk."
The other officer made a note in his book. He's tall and dark, and his voice is rumbly.
"Why'd you ask Munson for a ride if you wanted to walk?"
"Oh, I mean, he didn't drop me that far off. Just up the road."
They both looked at her in a way that made her want to fill the silence.
"I didn't want anyone to see him. I didn't want to make trouble. The basketball team, they don't get along."
The first officer cocked his head. "Your boyfriend is on the basketball team."
Yeah.
"But you were hanging out with Eddie Munson, even though they don't get along?"
Chrissy swallowed and said the first thing that came into her head. I'm tutoring him. Eddie, I mean.
When they just stared at her, she added, "He's nice."
It didn't seem like either of the police officers bought it.
The tall one flicked through his notebook. "Neither your parents nor your boyfriend nor any of the girls on the cheer squad said anything about you tutoring Munson."
Chrissy coughed a bit, and it was only kind of an act. Her throat was so dry, and her head really did hurt. The sunglasses felt like they were pinching her skull.
"Can I have a glass of water, please?"
The first officer stood up and went to the sink in her room, filled a glass, and brought it back. He passed it over with a question.
"Why were you keeping secrets from the people who love you?"
As she drank the water, Chrissy thought about what Jason had said about Messi. "He had a really good life in your room. You loved him." She thought about how he would scream and throw things when he was angry, then fall to his knees and beg for her forgiveness.
"I love you so much, baby. Just pretend it didn't happen."
She thought about how her mom would add, "I'm only saying this because I love you, Chrissy," to some of her worst tirades. She thought of her dad, who would whisper, "Keep your chin up, kiddo," as he packed up the car for another trip, always leaving when she needed him most. She thought of the dream she had, the cage, being a doll trapped in glass. When she finished drinking, Chrissy handed the glass back to the tall officer. "People think they know Eddie, but they don't. He's kind. He's funny." She knew those things were true. Kind and funny, not scary and mean. "He wants to graduate, and I want to help him. So I'm tutoring him."
"In what?"
asked the officer with the mustache.
That was easy enough. They were only in two classes together, and Chrissy knew Eddie was barely scraping by in both.
"Physics with Mr. Andrews and pre-calculus with Ms. O'Donnell."
The second cop made another note and then asked, "And how does Mr. Munson pay for you to tutor him?"
"Oh," Chrissy stuttered, inventing wildly. The radio was still on, a low hum in the background, and she seized a thought. "He helps me with, music."
"He gives you music lessons?"
Chrissy didn't take any music classes. She wasn't sure if Eddie did. He wasn't in band. Well, he was in a band, but not band. Her eyes flickered to the door, hoping someone would come in and save her. "Ma'am, Mom is pretty strict about, books and music and stuff."
That was true.
"But I like things she doesn't approve of. She won't let me have those tapes or play them in the house."
That was also true.
"So, Eddie and I listen to music."
That was a lie, even if it seemed like a nice dream.
Chrissy trailed off. The cops considered her story for a few tense breaths. She puts on her blandest, most neutral face, the one that makes everyone forget she's there, and hoped the sunglasses hid whatever truth her strange eyes might betray.
"Well then," sighed the first cop, "what else do you remember about last night?"
It was easier after that, except when the officers asked her where she thought they might be able to find Eddie. Chrissy's heart skipped.
"What do you mean, find him?" "We haven't been able to get a hold of him. His uncle says he wasn't there when he got home from his shift. Do you have any idea where he might be?"
Where was Eddie? Was he all right?
She pictured him pinned against a ceiling like he'd described her, his limbs broken. "No," she said, as if saying the word could stop her horrible imagination. Miss Kelly said that sometimes saying something out loud could help make it true. "No," she said again. The cops looked at her like they were waiting for her to finish. You might be able to ask a freshman named Dustin. I'm sorry, I don't know his last name, but Steve Harrington does. The officer checked his notes. Henderson, the one who was with you in the van last night? Yes, Chrissy said. They're in, a club together. The Satan Club, right. Chrissy shook her head again, even though it hurt. No, it's called the Hellfire Club. They play a game together. It's just a game. Then they left. Chrissy took off the sunglasses and went back to sleep. Now, Dustin, Steve, and Robin have come for a visit, and Chrissy is able to get them up to speed on the tutoring situation while her dad steps out to call work from the payphone down the hall. "Quick thinking," says Robin. "Yeah," Steve agrees. "You are a surprisingly good liar, Cunningham." Chrissy doesn't want to talk about how good of a liar she is. "Is Eddie okay?" "We don't know," Dustin answers. "He was fine when he dropped me off last night. Well, freaked out, but fine. But now he's gone. You haven't heard from him?" She shakes her head. And something outside casts a shadow that makes Chrissy jump. Dustin steps toward her, and Steve stands from where he's been slouched against the wall. "What were you doing at Eddie's place, though?" Chrissy had a crush on Steve Harrington for about a month when she was a freshman. But everyone has a crush on Steve Harrington at some point. It's like a Hawkins High rite of passage. Her blush now has nothing to do with how handsome he is. "I was trying to buy drugs," Chrissy answers, her words just loud enough for them to hear. Robin's eyebrows shoot up, and Chrissy explains, "I thought they might help with the, you know, visions and stuff." "Did they?" asks Dustin, interested. She shakes her head. "I don't know. It all happened before I could, try anything." She thinks about the whispers, the clock, the jittery feelings she's had all day. They're alone in the room, and they already know she's crazy, so she tells the truth. "I think that's a good thing, though. Whenever they give me opiates, like morphine, I mean, I hear things, like whispers, muttering, and a clock ticking." Steve's brow crinkles.
"Vecna's a clock guy?"
Chrissy doesn't recognize that word. "What is Vecna?" Dustin takes another step forward, so he's standing by her side. "Vecna is an evil lich necromancer who ascended to godhood. Well, demigodhood, an evil wizard of great power and malice." Chrissy gulps. "That sounds bad." "And that's what is chasing me?"
"No," says Steve. "That's a character from their dumb game. We don't know what's after you, but we're calling it Vecna for now, I guess. Doesn't matter. You're still cursed?"
Chrissy definitely feels cursed, insofar as she can guess what being cursed might feel like.
"How can we tell?"
"Well, the floating into the air thing feels like a clue," Robin chimes in, miming what Chrissy has to assume is levitation.
"Any more of that?"
"Not that I know of."
"Yeah, that feels like something the doctors would mention," says Steve. "But you're hearing voices and seeing things, right?"
She ducks her head. It sounds crazy when you say it like that.
Steve waves his hands, and his car keys clatter. The jangling makes Chrissy jump again.
I don't think you're crazy, Steve assures her. This isn't our first rodeo, remember? But we do need to find Eddie.
When Chrissy snatches one of the markers someone left on her bedside table, she realizes she never put her sunglasses back on. Her heart jags because her eyes are awful. But no one said anything about them, and she has more important things to worry about than the voice in her head that calls her hideous, repulsive, worthless. Ignoring the cutting words and the sunglasses, Chrissy grabs Dustin's sleeve and pushes it up. She writes the number for her hospital phone on his forearm, then tugs the sleeve down to hide it as her father returns.
"Call me when you know what's going on with Eddie," she whispers.
"Please," she adds in her normal voice. Dustin reaches out and gently pats Chrissy's hand, and she is amazed to find that she can feel condescended to by a freshman.
"I already have a girlfriend, but I'll make sure you're kept up to date."
Steve groans, gives Chrissy a farewell salute, and steers Dustin out of the room with a firm hand on his head and a polite farewell to Chrissy's father. Robin waves, gives a weird little bow to Chrissy's dad, and departs with them. Chrissy wishes she'd have thought to ask them to sign her cast. Three names she wanted, signatures she would remember.
Jason gets angry about Eddie later, after Chrissy's dad has to leave for Indianapolis again to deal with some work thing. He doesn't get angry very often. He's usually pretty nice. To Chrissy, at least. But he is angry now, because he spoke to the police and they revealed that Chrissy lied to him and made him look like a fool.
"Why didn't you tell me you were spending time with that freak?" he asks, quiet and serious.
Despite her protests, he turned the radio off so they could talk without interruptions.
He's sitting in the chair by her bed, leaning back with his arms crossed. He has no one to perform for here. It's just the two of them. The gentleness from the pep rally is gone.
"Because it would make you angry," she sighs, exhausted. She's got the sunglasses on again. They hurt her head, but Jason doesn't like the way her eyes look right now.
"Of course it would make me angry."
That's not just quiet, it's a hiss.
"He's crazy. He's dangerous. Look what happened to you."
Chrissy feels sick to her stomach from the painkillers and the food because she's not used to eating so much and it's not like she can go throw up. She can barely stand on her own.
"He's not any of those things. I told you," she says. "I told everyone. Eddie didn't do this."
"Are you crazy?"
Jason surges forward, taking her good hand in both of his and squeezing far too hard.
Chrissy is, again, so glad she never even considered going to Jason for help when the vision started. He wouldn't have understood. He would have made it worse.
"You don't know what that freak did or didn't do, Chrissy."
Jason's voice is almost a whine.
"What were you thinking, getting into his van? He's got, like, drugs in there, all sorts of shit. Crack, weed, pills. Who's to say he didn't slip you something? That's probably why you can't remember what happened, baby. Because he drugged you."
Chrissy tries to take her hand back, because he really is hurting her. But Jason won't let her go.
"Eddie didn't slip me anything. He couldn't have. I didn't eat anything in his van. I didn't drink anything. He was doing me a favor because I asked him to. He was being nice to me."
"That's the problem with you," Jason says, looking so tender that it's hard to reconcile his sweet face with the crushing grip he has on her hand. "You see the best in everyone, And that's something I love about you, baby, but there's no good in that freak.
Somewhere down the hall, the clock chimes. And for once, even through the terror, Chrissy is grateful to hear it, because it makes everything clearer all at once, like a veil lifting. "Let go of my hand, Jason," Chrissy says. She uses the voice she learned from her mother, the one for where there are no compromises. "Chrissy," Jason tries, releasing one hand from hers to pat her hair back, but she shakes her head, whipping her bangs across her face. "No compromises. Not this time." "You are hurting me. Let me go." Reluctantly, Jason drops her hand.
"I'm just trying to protect you, baby."
His expression is just this side of a pout, and that infuriates her.
The fury is like a key turning in a lock.
For the first time, Chrissy allows herself to be truly angry at Jason Carver. She reaches up and takes the sunglasses off, resting them in her lap and looking Jason straight in the eyes, her red to his blue. He flinches. It feels like a victory. "I don't want you to protect me," Chrissy says, and her voice does not shake. "I want you to leave." Jason jerks back like she's slapped him. Chrissy isn't sure if it's her eyes or her words. Both would be completely alien, she thinks. She's never spoken back to him. She's never told him what she wants, because Jason has never cared.
"What are you saying, baby?"
"I'm telling you to leave," she repeats. "I am tired. My arm hurts. My head hurts. You are insulting my friend and you are hurting me. So I want you to go."
There is a darkness in Jason's eyes then, deeper than Chrissy has ever seen before. "Your friend?"
Of course, he focuses on Eddie, not on what Chrissy wants. She thinks he would argue with her. She thinks he might even strike her, though he never has before. He just throws things, grabs her too tight, and shakes her sometimes. But Chrissy knows Mr. Carver hits Mrs. Carver. It's not like they talk about it. But despite Jason's belief that she sees the best in everyone, she's not a moron. She's seen wide, fading bruises on Jason, too, when his polo's right up in the back of his car after practice.
What would happen if he struck her now? Chrissy finds that she isn't afraid of the thought, because if he hit her, it would be a perfect reason to refuse to ever see Jason again.
But then Nurse Mendoza walks in, as if on cue. In a loud, clear voice, she says, "Chrissy, sweetheart, you must be so tired after holding court for all your admirers today." She gives Jason a hard look. "Let's give Her Majesty some time alone, all right? She needs to rest up."
"We're still talking,"
Jason says, leaning back in his chair and crossing his legs. "And you can talk more when Chrissy invites you back, honey." When Jason doesn't move, Nurse Mendoza crosses her arms. "Visiting hours are over. Time to go." "Yes," Chrissy crows inside her head. "That is the voice of no compromise." As Jason stands, he reaches out, and Chrissy just suppresses a flinch. He touches her cheek, feather light, and brushes the hair back from her eyes.
"I love you, Chrissy,"
he says, but this time it feels like a threat. And then he leaves. Chrissy pushes the teddy bear Jason brought onto the floor and asks Nurse Mendoza to turn the radio up.
How fucking loud do you have to be? I am 20 stories up and I can hear your goddamn car radio. I'm gonna have to run chapter 5 through the noise removal. Consider this a blooper. And now there's a goddamn siren. This chapter is gonna be a fucking wretch. I'm pissed.